Well, good morning, and I want to add my thanks and congratulations to Holly for organizing such an exceptional meeting at such an appropriate time in the life of the development of team science. I think one of the conclusions you'll no doubt come to at the end of this meeting is that if every university had a Holly Falk Krasinski, you'd do a lot more team science. So I'm always very impressed by what you do, Holly. So what I've been asked to do is give you two or three slides. I think we're very strictly limited to give you a sense of what we've been doing with our team, which is known as the Oncofertility Consortium. And this consortium was funded by the NIH Roadmap, by the Common Fund, under a mechanism known as the Interdisciplinary Research Consortium, or the IRC. And I think it was something like 7 years ago or so that several of the folks in Building 1 decided that fostering team science was something that was a valuable thing to do. And so they brought in people like Luis Amaral and Brian Uzzi to the NIH and talked about team science and, in fact, developed a large mechanism that was nominally for interdisciplinary teams to come together to solve intractable problems. And I think, my perspective is that the NIH often doesn't announce that any kind of entrepreneurial science would be fine, and I think that's what they were doing. Let's let the community tell us what the intractable problems are, and let's let them tell us, let the community tell us what teams should be brought together. And so I thought this was a very far-reaching and important mechanism. I do have to report today, however, that this mechanism is in its, we're entering our fourth year, and it's already been announced, although if we can persuade anyone in the room here or anyone in DC that this mechanism within the Common Fund will not be refunded. So we will not be able to recompete for this kind of team-based science. There were eight other programs that were funded nationally with different kinds of intractable problems identified, and I know as I've looked at the progress from each of these centers, it's really been extraordinary. And so I think the NIH would be well served by continuing a mechanism that was as broadly defined as identifying intractable problems and allowing teams to come together and solve them. Of course, the roadmap was meant because most of the time the roads are rather crooked along the way, the pathway towards solving a problem. And if we, the at least metaphor is, if we had a roadmap, if we had some guideposts, maybe we could make that road a little bit more straight and narrow. And so that's the image that we have here. So oncofertility was, in fact, a term that was coined to correspond with the submission of this grant. I thought about this idea for a couple of years, and Holly had been very encouraging, and she saw the IRC mechanism and thought it would be perfect, and I told her I just couldn't do it. So finally on a Thursday when I was in Houston, she told me I just absolutely had to do it. So I wrote a first draft on my flight back, and that became ultimately the first grant application, which was an XO2. It was a pre-grant application. Our notion was that, oops, Holly, I pushed the wrong button, of course. So the notion of oncofertility and the intractable problem was at the time there was really no fertility options being provided to young women with a cancer diagnosis. Okay, the men, and in fact Lance Armstrong is a great example, in many cases were being provided options for sperm banking, for example, but women really weren't being provided that option. And so that was the intractable problem that we identified, which really was a basic science problem. We really didn't have some of the fundamental breakthroughs we needed to provide to all women. It was a clinical problem. The clinical environment was not engineered in such a way that they could accommodate patients in the reproductive endocrinology arena who were very sick and needed to be treated very urgently. Oncologists weren't used to having their patients move out of their care for a period of time. And so we're reluctant to relinquish care. And so we had a number of problems that were associated with this notion of oncofertility. And the idea was that if we could ensure that oncologists and fertility specialists both saw themselves as part of the problem, part of the solution, we might actually have a way to move forward. And so oncofertility became that. Oncofertility, and I'll just go back for a moment, really is interdisciplinary, it's interprofessional, and it's geographically distributed. So we have people from different kinds of basic science, from different kinds of social science and humanities, and we have economists and policy specialists. We have folks in reproductive health law, bioethics, community science, communication science, and cognitive and learning science. And they are across the nation and across the globe. So part of what we had to do was to provide corridors through which the learning could be transmitted and then converted into practice. Our notion was that we really wanted to go from bench to the bedside. So oncofertility is, and this has kind of been refined, I think, over the last several years. First of all, it is an NIH-funded grant. And so it has a half-life, and it's a very short half-life at this point. We are all under we all know that there is a termini for this grant. And so as we've come together as a team over the first 2.5 years, it's also the case that now there is some movement away from the central goals because, of course, everyone has to get refunded. So this is an interesting point of this topic. It was originally a mechanism to make, it was the original grant was to solve intractable problems. I think the first thing is you have to make an intractable problem tractable. You have to get your arms around it, identify what the issues are, and I think we've done that. It's also a brand. This is now a word that is in the English language, and it is a, we have a ribbon that is a patient awareness ribbon, so it has become an identifiable brand, both for the patient and the provider, that they can use to say, we have this kind of service that can be provided. It's also used by the media to describe an entire area, and the public seems to understand it in a way that's pretty intimate, and so that's been part of what we've built. I think it is an exemplar of interdisciplinary work, and that might be a hard thing to say in this setting because all of you are doing extraordinary interdisciplinary work, but I think it is the kind of thing that's really gone from the desk to the bench to the bedside and beyond, and we can talk about that maybe later in the discussion. It's a pathway for basic research breakthroughs. There really were some critical parts of the program that could not move forward unless we created this entire environment. Part of what we had to do to create options for young women with cancer was to utilize human ovaries in order to adopt technology that had been built in preclinical models into the human. We needed to have a way to test these technologies. And you couldn't do that unless there were ovaries that you could work on. And so you had to have an entire clinical operation, and you had to have a way to ensure that the patient understood what was being done, what the choices were, at a time of extraordinary existential crisis associated with a cancer diagnosis, but in that same moment being told we're going to provide you with the hope or expectation that this technology will catch up with you as you defeat the disease and go on into survivorship mode. So we think it's a pathway for basic research breakthroughs, and it's a nucleating clinical program, as that said very quickly, and you can see that we have a number of ways of communicating the information through the web, and you see the dots on the map for the clinical partners, about 55 in total domestically, and we've announced a large group in Europe as well just recently. So the scientific progress really goes from, as I say, from the desk to the bench to the bedside and then beyond. And I think one of the things that is often thought about is that team science or the work of NIH ultimately goes into kind of the end goal is to get something into a company and to be able to sell something, to be able to have a product, a device, or a new drug. And that's not what we're doing, and in fact, that's not where we're headed. In fact, this is to really re-engineer a clinical enterprise and provide options to cancer patients. This is my last slide on interdisciplinarity. It's a very fumbling attempt to try and bring everything together, but the notion here is that we've tried to share best practices as we've built the way or the management process for example, for the clinical teams. We've put all that information in a box and given it away. We've said, here's the IRB. Let us help you write it. Let us help you talk with your IRB. So instead of making everyone come up with their own lessons learned, we try to learn lessons and then disseminate it very quickly. We have engaged academic technologies, and I know you'll hear from Bob Taylor later in the day, in order to have geographically distributed groups work effectively, and especially teams who come from very different perspectives, you have to have ways of getting people together in the same room. And so we do that with virtual grand rounds and virtual lab meetings, and that's been a very strong part of our program. We have what I call creating a common language, and it may be a parlance that you already use. I feel like I created it, but who knows? This is this notion that if you're really talking with an economist and a social scientist and a lawyer and a clinician, many of you come to the problem from very different perspectives, and so being able to create that common way of communicating is really an essential part of the process. In addition, of course, the different scholarships publish differently. There are different units by which you say that you have been accomplished in different disciplines. So we have to understand that as we're building groups together. We have what I think is cutting-edge research or reimagined clinical enterprise and interdisciplinary thinking. So this is one part of this entire enterprise, which includes the education at the desk, the bench, the bedside, and then ultimately the community. You can see our logo, and I'll close on this comment. And this logo is our patient awareness ribbon. It's the brand. I wear it every day. Wear the brand, be the brand is our little mantra. And you can see that it is itself interdisciplinary. So it is two different colors, and it is a combination of balls and smooth lines. It is in the traditional iconic ribbon formation, but these little balls basically represent eggs or sperm or embryos, depending on your perspective. The two colors of the purple, the deep resonant knowledge of self. The green is the spring hopefulness of the future. And you can see that this ribbon emerges into what is a subliminally slightly expectant modality. And so what we have is something that we think provides an opportunity for us to think in an interdisciplinary way, but also provides a way that the entire community, no matter what your perspective is, male, female, practitioner, basic scientist, we can all come together around this kind of iconography. So with that, again, I'll thank Holly and for the organizers for the invitation to speak at this particular venue.